But right now, let's join the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the COVID pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
And come back to that shortly, okay? But it is 9:45, so we're going to be joined by Dr. Locke and Willie Bentz. Thank you, Dr. Locke and Willie, for joining us today. I do want to acknowledge that we have reached a point in listenership and engaged citizenry that we are getting a lot of very specific questions for Dr. Locke and Willie. And I just want to temper the public's expectation that we might not have time to get to all of those. We simply get so many now. So we're going to try to be working with Dr. Locke to kind of lump those into consistent themes and prioritize some of those. So we're figuring that out, but please don't be offended if your very question doesn't get answered. It's, you know, we're in the midst of a lot of work for our public health folks. So thank you both for being here. Nice to see you.
Good morning, I got the KPTZ question list a little early this week, so it gave me a chance to narrow them down to some categories. So I think we can certainly answer the different theme areas that have been raised. There's a lot of interest in vaccines this week, and so I'll get to that and the specifics of it. Before that, just the big picture is the U.S. has gone through another new all-time peak, although in the last week, we cases have dropped a bit, down 7% nationally, but we're still over 200,000 cases per day in the U.S., and deaths have been averaging 3,300 a day as we near 400,000 deaths nationally. In Washington State, we similarly had a spike, kind of a holiday spike in late December, early January, and now we've dropped 29% below that most recent peak. Within this state, we have about 1,800 cases a day, and we're approaching a death count of 4,000 people. Jefferson County now has 272 cases we've recorded. 22 of those were in the first full week of January, 14 in the second week. So that brings our case count down a bit. Our case count per 100,000 has now dropped from 125 to 116 per 100,000. And our percent positivity of tests is at 3.18%, which is way higher than the 2% goal we would like it to be at, but way lower than almost anyone else in the state. The Clallam County, in comparison, is at 154 cases per 100,000, 8.5% positivity. Kitsap is 233 cases per 100,000, 12.5% positivity. And Mason, which is now in the roadmap to recovery region we're in, Mason is at 360 cases per 100,000 and 19.8% positivity. And those numbers contrast with the statewide case rates, which is 403 per 100,000 for Washington State, and overall Washington State positivity for COVID-19 tests is 17.7%. So those are the number. The big changes underway in national COVID-19 strategy, both in terms of testing, disease prevention, and rolling out the vaccine. We're And those changes are desperately welcome. Today, of course, is the last day of the old administration. The new administration will approach this fundamentally differently, that science will once again be in the driver's seat. Hopefully, credibility will be restored and we can actually believe the things that we're being told. And we will see the kind of investment, the emergency investment and the wartime level kind of response that has long been missing. So we're going to see an extraordinary amount of hopefully not only money, but personnel and volunteer efforts and National Guard efforts flowing into the next 6 months of the pandemic response, because we really need that. Vaccines are rolling out, and I can been working very closely with the hospital, who currently is the main provider in Jefferson County, and they've been doing an extraordinary job of this. They gave me their latest statistics. So as of today, as of yesterday, they moved into the 1B category. So vaccinating people 80 years of age and older. And in that group, they saw 237 people in the drive-through clinic. Today, they think they'll see 250. And they have over 1,000 appointments scheduled they opened up appointments last Thursday, so there's 1,000 people scheduled for this week at around 250 a day is the throughput of the drive-through clinic. So far, they've administered 2,198 doses. That's about 57% of what they have on hand. So they still have 1,700 doses on hand. And part of that, they were, since they're both giving second doses and first doses to different people, it's been a kind of an inventory control problem. And the state has assured us that they will manage the second dose inventory. So they've given us a very clear signal, use what you've got. And so that's what's allowed them to open up and use these additional doses. They've not received any shipments this week, so they ordered them and did not receive them. So what how sustainable this level of vaccination will be entirely dependent on what gets allocated to Jefferson County.
Sorry, can I ask a little bit about that? I just heard on the way in that, you know, Inslee's committed to getting us up from, 16,000 vaccines delivered per day up to 40,000, but that Washington State is only planning to get 100,000 per week. And I was wondering if you could speak to that kind of thing. Are things going to change tomorrow? Is that what we're hoping?
Well, unfortunately, it's not going to change tomorrow. That's assured. Washington only knows what they're going to get vaccine-wise week to week. That's how it's worked. And I was on a vaccine summit this Saturday, and what we were told is Washington has assured they will get at least 100,000 doses per week. And it may go up by about 2 to 3% per week, but for the foreseeable future, that represents Washington's share of the amount of vaccine being produced, and that is only a third of the state's goal of being able to do 45,000 vaccinations a day. That's around 15,000 a day. If you vaccinate 7 days a week, and so, and those are brutal numbers for Washington State, because as I've done the population math, that, you know, in Jefferson County, 37% of the population is now in the 1B group, and the first tier of it, what they're calling B1, and that's around 11,000 people. And so not all will get the vaccine, but we think at least 70%, maybe higher, will get it. If Washington State gets 100,000 doses a week, Jefferson County population-wise is about 0.5% of the state. So that would be only 500 doses a week to Jefferson County. However, we have three times the number of people in that age group that the rest of the state does. So our, just by that back of the envelope math, that would be up to 1,500 doses a day, but that's probably it. Because the vaccine will be spread over the entire state. And we're told, and things are going to be unstable and unpredictable for the next 2 to 3 weeks as the administrations transition. And then we're told it will finally stabilize. And we will know predictably week to week how much vaccine we're going to get. And then we can start doing the rational planning that it takes where we'll know who we can schedule, we'll know how long, we'll be able to tell people where they are in line and when vaccine will be available and all of those things. But right now, the limiter is, there were places in urban Washington that were slow to get off the ground in terms of vaccine administration. We on the Olympic Peninsula were not among them. We were among the very first in the state to aggressively move forward on this. But now, as of the last couple days, Washington State's giving out the vaccine as fast as they're getting it in. So we are giving about 1,500 doses a day in Washington State. So that administration bottleneck is not really the problem. It's vaccine supply, which is a national thing. And the question, there will be more vaccines, different vaccines in the future, but right now it's looking like the other vaccines will not be available until like April at the earliest. So we will be these two vaccines, which are extraordinary vaccines. People should really be celebrating how safe and effective the vaccines are. And it's understandable that everyone would want to get vaccinated immediately, but it's just not possible to do that. And so we've got to, psychologically, we have to be able and willing to wait and to keep up the hard work of preventing COVID transmission and keep it up, you know, through the remaining winter and well into the spring and probably into the summer. But eventually there will be vaccine for everyone who wants to get it. We just can't tell them exactly when that time is going to be. And then we're moving forward with other plans. We're expecting that by March we'll be able to move into more mass vaccination events, and so we're planning those. I actually this weekend I went to the as an observer at the vaccine event in Sequim, and then in Port Angeles on Sunday, and you know, very well run. We're learning from those kind of activities. So we are more than capable of doing large events in gymnasiums and public places. It's the only thing we lack right now is a vaccine. Now that right now the hospital can efficiently give out virtually all the vaccines coming to Jefferson County. There are two other sites. Safeway has a small amount. Tri-Area Pharmacy in Port Hadlock, they're bound by the same priority restrictions as everyone else, but they've entered the field of providers, and we're working with them very closely to kind of keep all our efforts synchronized.
Dr. Lefty, can I talk about who is eligible at this point?
Yes. So it's kind of changing day by day, but But right now, people on the 1A list, as it was called, which is essentially licensed healthcare workers, people who work on the front lines in COVID response, first responders, paramedics, and others who are out in the field facing exposure risk, and then the residents and staff of long-term care facilities. And unfortunately, that the pharmacies that were contracted to do that have been slow to get into gear. They finally are starting to vaccinate the long-term care facilities. In Jefferson County, we went ahead and vaccinated all the staff with vaccine that the hospital had received, just to jumpstart the process and to try to protect the people in the skilled nursing facilities as rapidly as we could. The new list, which is called B1, the B category has four different tiers on it. So the B1 group started out being people over age 70. Now the governor just changed that yesterday to anyone over age 65 and older. And then there's this category we've been struggling to understand, which is anyone over 50 or older who lives in a multi-generational household. And what that's meant to get at is families that have frail elders who they are taking care of in the home. You know, instead of being in a long-term care facility, your parent or grandparent is in the home. And so people over age 50 are also, who are in those kind of homes, are eligible for vaccination. We support the concept behind that. It's very difficult to operationalize it. It's very difficult to determine who is in those homes. This is not something we necessarily have in a medical record. So it becomes kind of an honors system. If people want to state, tell us that they're in that kind of situation, then they're potentially eligible. Right now, Jefferson Healthcare is focusing on people 80 years of age and older, and that is a very large demographic in Jefferson County, and that is the group most at risk of hospitalization, severe disease, and death from COVID-19. So we feel very clearly that is the highest risk group. At these early stages, we are trying to prevent death by rolling out these vaccines in a certain way. And then Jefferson Healthcare will move into younger B1 populations, you know, as they move through the tiers. And currently, the governor's guideline is if you move through about half your eligible group, then you move on to the other group. You don't wait till 100% one tier is done before you move on to the other. Yes, Mr. Morrow.
Yeah, I think it's just important to emphasize, because of the confusion that can be out there, is while the governor has changed their guidelines and opened up 1B to 65 and older, we're very much limited by the amount of vaccine that's available, and as you pointed out, the demographics. And so you're starting with sort of a subset of that, of people who are 85 and older, just because that's who we have capacity and sufficient vaccine to serve.
Yeah, and they switched it to 80 as of Friday. So it's 80 and older.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a large group in Jefferson County as well. It's, you know, probably at least 5,000 people. So any other questions? I can go into most of the KPTZ questions were about vaccination, and we've covered some of those issues already. Interesting one was, so in effect, how do you get to be a vaccination site? How are vaccination sites chosen? And the answer to that is you apply for it, but being qualified is not an easy thing. If you want to take a Pfizer vaccine, you have to have these specialized ultra-cold freezers. You have to have pharmacists who know how to handle this very fragile vaccine. Because it's essential that we get the vaccine to people in its highest potency state, and that we not waste vaccine, we not damage the vaccine through incorrect handling. So people who get the vaccine have to prove to the state that they have the ability to store and handle it properly. And not all clinics can do that. You can't just use a regular refrigerator for this kind of stuff. It has to have temperature monitors on it and log devices. And if you have a power outage, your refrigerator starts calling you. It starts calling all these numbers urgently to let you know that the power has been cut off. So that's what storing very expensive vaccines require. But places like pharmacies and some clinics and certainly health departments and hospitals, they're the ones that have been doing this for a long time. So they're the ones that are chosen. I get a lot of questions about people saying they're eager to get vaccinated because now they can take their mask off and start, the pandemic will be over at least for them. And that's not true. And in fact, nothing changes very much at all except your personal risk of getting this disease and dying from it. That does change when you get vaccinated. But all the things we're doing now, we're going to keep doing. If a vaccinated person shows up in a public place without a mask, they will have to leave that place. You'll still need that mask. Over time, some things like travel may get easier, but that getting vaccinated does not change what you can safely do a lot in the near term.
Does that change at some point? Is there a threshold at which the behaviors can start to change? And then also people have said if you have two people who have been vaccinated, does it change their ability to be together masked, not in public, but in private settings?
I think the answer to that is yes. There's not specific guidelines that have been developed yet, and we're gonna get a lot more information about this. There's studies right now to see if people are still infectious even if they've been vaccinated, and once we have the answer to that, we'll be able to make much more rational recommendations. But probably the earliest changes, you know, as we get to the point where whole households are vaccinated and different groups interacting, that will change the risk with that. But people have to remember, even a 95% effective vaccine fails one time out of 20. And so that person, you know, out in the public, with high prevalence in that public space, still is at risk, you know, has that 1 in 20 risk of getting infected. There were several questions about, you know, should you get tested and see if you've had COVID-19 before getting vaccinated? We don't recommend that. If you actually have COVID-19, we don't want you being vaccinated while you have the disease. That's mostly for the sake of protecting the vaccinators and the people you're in. So if you're in isolation for active disease, or if you're in quarantine based on exposure, you shouldn't have the vaccine then. But if you've had it if you had COVID-19 in the past, we know the vaccine is safe for you to take, and we think it's beneficial. That is to say, it gives you longer and better immunity than the natural disease. So we're not restricting people based on that. There's no cost. There's at least no out-of-pocket cost. People who have insurance, many vaccinators are billing the insurance to recover some of their administration costs, but no one will be declined for ability to pay. And if you don't have insurance, you still have the same access to it. There are questions, you know, are we prepared to deal with allergic reactions to the vaccine? And as many know, we are seeing an increased rate of allergic reactions with these vaccines as compared to other vaccines. Across the board, we see serious allergic reactions in vaccines, about one reaction in a million vaccines given. With the COVID-19, we're seeing about 11 per million. So about one in 100,000 people that get vaccinated have what's called an anaphylaxis reaction. You know, this overall allergic reaction that has to be treated with epinephrine. So we are very prepared to treat that. At all our vaccine sites, we have trained personnel, we have EMTs, we have EpiPens. We actually have way more than that. And one of the advantages of doing this at the hospital is you're right next to an emergency room where we can do even more elaborate treatments. So we're very prepared to deal with that. And it's the reason that everybody gets vaccinated, goes into an observation area for 15 minutes before they are allowed to leave. And that's when we observe them for allergic reactions. And if they have a history of having had severe reactions in the past, then we observe them for 60 minutes. But one of the questions I got was, well, I had a serious reaction to an IV dye used in an X-ray study. Does that mean I can't get the vaccine? And the answer, fortunately, is no. Anyone who's had these previous, the only thing that is a reason not to get the vaccine is if you've had a serious adverse reaction to this vaccine. So if you get an anaphylactoid reaction to this vaccine, we would not give you the second dose of it. But otherwise, people who have had serious allergic reactions, we want you to tell us about that, and we will observe you for a longer period of time, but you can still get the vaccine. There are almost no contraindications to getting this vaccine. So I think I've covered most of those. Maybe answer the one about, so what side effects? You know, if you don't have an immediate allergic reaction, what other kind of side effects do you get from the vaccine? And we know that pretty well. Around half of the people who get the vaccine will get a sore arm. And sometimes it's dramatically sore. It's a kind of a, you roll over on it at night and it wakes you up. And that can last for a day or two. And then about 50% are getting or reporting kind of a fatigued feeling and a mild headache the day after or up to 2 days after the vaccine, and that's it. And then side effects with the second dose are much more expected. You know, that's where you got a chance to get a low-grade fever and a ache all over feeling. Again, lasting 1 to 2 days, but some people feel sick enough to not want to go to work that day. So we're warning them of that. And I'm making the point that I am hard pressed to call these side effects, because they're really effects. You know, this is what we want to happen. This is what it feels like when your immune system is being turned on. And that's why you feel this way when you're coming down with a cold or some other infection. That's a good thing. It means that the switch that your body is recognizing this spike protein that your cells are making and forming a robust immune response. So if people feel those symptoms after the vaccine, celebrate it. It means the vaccine's working. But if you don't feel them, it doesn't mean the converse. It doesn't mean the back. If you have no side effects, that just means you're lucky. Yeah, you know, it doesn't mean the vaccine's not working. The vaccine works very well in at least 95% of people that take it.
Dr. Locke, I'm conscious of time because we have a 10:30 hearing. I want to leave time for Willie. I know I have one question, which is about our regional phase, ability to move through phases and reopening. Could you just quickly address where we are as a region and why it is that we will not be advancing to phase two?
Can I add one little bit onto that question that I'd love to ask about that too? Looking at the 115 report, you know, our metrics on three of the four metrics are really low, and then the hospital admissions is the highest in the state by far. I wonder if you could dig into that disparity between the COVID rate and that hospitalization too.
Yeah, I cannot figure out those statistics because none of those measures correlate with the data we have. Our case rates are going up this region. The state shows that they're going down. Our percent positivity has gone up. It shows the opposite. And the thing that is least problematic is hospitalizations. I don't know what the hospitalization rates are in Mason County. They have been going up in Kitsap County. It's St. Michael's, but this is one of the problems with this system. This is state data, and state data related to COVID-19 has been notoriously inaccurate. I looked on the website today. State of Washington shows percent positivity in Jefferson County as being over 20%. For COVID tests. In reality, it's 3.14%. We know every single test that's done in Jefferson County, and so we create our own rates. So we are at the, whatever numbers the state comes up with, we are at the mercy of that because it has no input from us. They're gathering it from their own databases. And I think it's certainly reasonable to challenge their sources. We would like to see the numbers that they have, and we can, you know, cross-tabulate them against other information we have. I would say this about the moving from phase one to phase two, is right now where Washington State is, you know, at this kind of record high outbreak level, it being in phase one is one of the only things keeping the lid on this epidemic right now, is that's just the unfortunate reality, is that case rates are so high in most areas of the state that case investigation and contact tracing doesn't work anymore. You just can't find the cases, you can't find their contacts. These economic mitigations are what's preventing us from becoming Southern California and that kind of thing. And so we really have to focus on the underlying problem, and that is how do we get disease transmission down all around the state. I cannot vouch for the state numbers. They don't fit with any other numbers we have.
That's weird.
Yeah, Dr. Locke, are you and other health officers giving the feedback about accuracy of the data to the state so that they can try to fix it or at least coordinate with local health officers to get better data?
Yes, we've given them that feedback. It would be helpful for it coming from other quarters because it's the data we're really focusing on, the critical data, is the data we need to do our job. You know, for instance, over this weekend, the WEDS system, which tells us the new cases that have been diagnosed, that system crashed, and it was down over the weekend. And that we need that. That's how we find out about half the cases of people who have tested positive, and notify them and investigate their case. So to be honest, we're much more focused on those kind of data systems than regional hospitalization rates, which we have no control over.
Dr. Lapp, so when you say other quarters, would it be helpful, like, if we send a letter, or would you draft a letter for us to send?
Yes, we can do that. Let me work on what what kind of questions to answer, because that's, the governor reviewed this, the governor's office reviewed that scheme with the health officers 1 week before they released it. We told them that all kinds of things were wrong with it. They didn't change a single thing as a result of our criteria. And now as Commissioner Dean knows, I'm testifying on Thursday in Olympia that they want to reorganize the entire public health system. So that's also kind of their response to our feedback.
Okay. Any other questions for Dr. Locke before we hand it over to Willie?
Well, whatever we can do to help, let us know. I mean, I'm sure that we can get organized to send a letter, right, colleagues?
Absolutely, yeah.
Just one last question. I'm wondering, Dr. Locke, if you can remind folks if they aren't sure, like I've had contact from some people who think they're 1A because of some home health care gig or something. Can you remind where people would confirm where they are, and if they are eligible, reach out to schedule a vaccination proactively?
Right. The lists are public, so the 1A definition is pretty detailed now. So if you clearly fall on it, you can contact us at the hospital. I'm getting cases for determination. We will review it, and if you're on if you meet the terms of the list, we're happy to provide you with an appointment. We want everyone who's in that category to be vaccinated. So either contact the hospital by email, or you can send an email to me or to Jefferson Health, anywhere at the health department. It'll get to me eventually. And I'm making about a dozen of those determinations every day.
And is that one clearinghouse? Because we hear about, and I suspect Willie's going to talk about the Chimicum Grange becoming a site that the Bainbridge folks are going to be doing a clinic there, the Safeway doses. Is there one clearinghouse for all of those venues in Jefferson County, the Tri-Area Pharmacy? We know there are a few different venues. Does it all go through one place for the decision of yay or nay?
Yeah, we had our first meeting of that group yesterday. I don't want to cut into Willie here, but we're going to use the hospital to start with. Their website will be the clearinghouse for where things are available, and we'll get on board with the health department too. As soon as this stabilizes, we'll get that information out there in as many venues as we can.
Okay, thank you. Hey, welcome, Willie.
Thank you, Commissioner. So right off the bat, I will direct folks right now to the singular best resource for finding information on the vaccination phases, et cetera, and that's Jefferson Healthcare's website. They specifically have a COVID-19 vaccine information page. So that resource is jeffersonhealthcare.org/COVID-19-vaccine. And that has kind of a one-stop shop, frequently asked questions list for folks to find out what the phases are, where they fit in, everything that you can think of related to the vaccine, other than getting it here at the Monday morning briefing from Dr. Locke. We're directing folks to that page, and Jefferson Healthcare is keeping it up to date with the most recent information so that folks can stay up to date there. And right now, here at the Emergency Operations Center, we're helping manage a call center for folks to sign up, get their vaccination appointments. The best way to get your vaccine appointment, if you are indeed eligible, is to go to that website, and there is an online portal you can sign up directly. However, we have volunteers on the phone standing by to help you sign up for your appointment. If you can't access that portal, if you're having difficulty, if you have additional questions, et cetera, that phone number is 360-344-9791, and that'll connect you with a volunteer here directly at the EOC. They'll walk you through getting signed up for your two vaccination appointments, and they'll go from there. Volunteers are currently on standby weekdays, so Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you do call outside of those hours and you leave a voicemail, we try to get back to you within 48 hours, although that's very much dependent on call volume. As our first day we were open last week, we had a 45-minute to an hour wait time. Folks were inundating that line with calls, but we eventually were able to work through and get everyone signed up, so we thank them for their patience. Right now, as Dr. Locke mentioned, though, we are only scheduling appointments for age 80 and above. We did get quite a few calls after Governor Inslee lowered the 1B1 range to 265. And I really think it is important to really emphasize the fact there is a difference between what the state is authorizing us to do versus what is actually possible and what we're actually doing locally. Given the local vaccine supply, given local throughput capabilities, et cetera. So I really want folks to pay attention to that local Jefferson Healthcare page to figure out what's going on locally, rather than thinking that just because the state is authorizing something, that's going to be blanketed all across the state. There are discrepancies between the two, again, just given the local capacities and, you know, really given the amount of vaccine we're actually receiving. So be sure to pay attention to, you know, what's happening locally. Not that the state's not important. We just often have to make local determinations based on our capabilities, as Philip kind of smacks. The other thing, and this is the third week in a row I've kind of mentioned this, I really do want to thank everyone who's already reached out offering their willingness to volunteer in a medical capacity. We're continuing to seek volunteers with both a medical background and with a non-medical background. If you're willing to help out and help get folks vaccinated, reach out to us. Go to the Jefferson County EOC page. Call us, shoot us an email. We can use help, obviously, from retired doctors and nurses to actually help get the vaccine in people's arms. But even if you aren't medically trained and want to help out on our vaccine line and are willing to help schedule appointments, you're willing to help with the at the vaccine site itself, processing paperwork, doing traffic control, just acting as a runner to perform literally any task and help keep things moving along, reach out to us. We will need to get you background checked and a little bit of paperwork going to register you as a temporary emergency worker. But there's a lot of work to be done. So here at the EOC, we're really committed to helping out Jefferson County Public Health and Jefferson Healthcare make this a success by filling in some of the gaps with volunteer support. So if you have some free time, want to lend a hand, please do get in contact with us. We're getting a huge influx of folks. We can't guarantee that we're going to necessarily put you to work. The goal is to have too much of a good thing. But again, please reach out and we'll get that paperwork started, put you on the list, and reach out when the time and place comes to put you to work. So again, thanks to everyone who's reached out to us already. We'll be in touch to start putting you to work here soon. In the meantime, we can always use more help, so feel free to reach out there.
Thank you, Willie. Any questions? Emergency management. All right. Thank you both very much. We'll be back on our Monday schedule next week. We have a hearing to get to, and I'm going to need a 2-minute bio break before we get started. So let's recess till 10:30. And thank you all.
Thank you.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.